This is the Pitch Vision My Cricket Coach Show, number 42. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision My Cricket Coach Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com and email us on mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. My name's David Hinchliffe in the UK.
And I'm Kevin Sampath from Australia. Coming up on the show, we explore into the theme of nutrition. Ian Ponch shares another fast bowling tip with us. And we have an interview with Lawrence Houghton, who's a researcher at the University of Western Australia.
So we've got a theme of nutrition this week. So let's have a chat about that, shall we? Are you a nutritional perfectionist?
I can't say I'm a perfectionist, but I try my best to sort of not go down the bad path. Especially since the last year or so, when I've sort of started getting a bit more serious about my cricket and about how I eat and all. So I've sort of been following the tips here and there on pitchvision.com. Mm. And at the moment, what I do is I try to have as low carbs as possible, unless it's one of my post-workout meals.
Okay,
because that's when I have my most carbs. Because before that, because I have an Indian background, we have heaps of carbs throughout the day. So like rice, everything else that's full of carbs, which is sort of not really good for you 24/7. So what I'm basically trying to do is cut that down at the moment to about once a day, which is probably about dinner, because I go to the gyms at night. And as soon as I come home, I have a bit of dinner, and that's how it's looking so far. And I'm pleased to say the results are looking good so far. It's not so much as weight loss. It's more, I feel lighter on my feet. So I can definitely see results in terms of mobility, and I don't have as much weight lagging around, especially because I'm a fast bowler. So what kind of nutrition do you go through, David? I mean, like, how do your meals look?
I think you're right. The key with when it comes to nutrition is for cricket isn't that it's going to make some massive difference to your performance. It's that if you get it wrong, you can tell the difference between if you get it wrong and you get it right over the longer term. So, you know, you feel that little bit, as you say, you feel that little bit better. You know, it's just that one less thing to worry about, rather than suddenly, you know, you take this magic pill and you suddenly have bags of energy. It's just that if you eat right, you're not feeling tired, and you've got enough energy, and you know it's one of those things that you only really miss it when you're not eating right, and then you realise that there's something not quite right, and you can't put your finger on it, and then you start eating right, and you think, oh, that's what it was. It's a very subtle thing, but it does make a big difference, I think. To answer your question, I sort of tend to follow the same idea as you, really, Kev, which is to eat healthily and have plenty of whole foods and fruit and vegetables and stuff like that, you know, to make sure that I'm getting all my nutrients, and just keep an eye on when I eat those starchy carbs. I mean, not so much to lose weight, but just to know when is a good time to eat them and when isn't a good time to eat them, really. Generally speaking, if you eat them all day every day, lots of refined sugars and things like that, your body doesn't really respond very well to that, most people anyway. Whereas if you sort of save it up for after you've exercised, or, you know, save it up for after you've been playing cricket, or maybe the odd thing you have for breakfast, then, you know, that's not so, that's more manageable, put it that way. So, I've got these sort of rules that I follow that quite closely, and try and stick to them 90% of the time. So we got some questions later on which talk about nutrition. So we'll cover those rules, and we'll talk in a bit more detail about it later on.
And also, David, I was going through the Pitch Vision site, and I've noticed Gary Palmer has an invitation for players, young players, into his academy. And this is a real-life academy. You actually go to get trained by Gary Palmer and other trainers. And I believe it's in the UK for people aged 10 to 20. Is that right?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Yeah, as I said on the site, Gary knows that the people who read My Cricket Coach and the people who listen to the My Cricket Coach show are the type of people who, you know, really do care about improving their cricket. And if you care to the extent that you want to become a professional cricketer and you think you've got the talent to get there and the commitment to get there, then you can go to pitchvision.com and go to the My Cricket Coach section, and you can put your deposit down and go to the academy and give yourself the best chance of playing professional cricket.
Okay, we have again Ian Pont, the fast bowling guru, who's also a Pitch Vision Academy coach, with a fast bowling tip for us. So let's have a listen to what Ian has to say.
Hi Ian, good to have you back.
David, thank you.
Even for fast bowlers now, it's important to be able to field and bat well in modern cricket. How much time should you take away from bowling practice to work on other skills?
That's a really good question. It's very relevant because I work with a lot of 11 to 18 year olds, and most people between 11 and 18 tell me they bat and bowl.
Yeah.
So what I always say to people is, if you bat and bowl, you don't allocate half your time to batting and half your time to bowling. Mm-hmm. You allocate twice as much time. So if you're a batter who bowls or a bowler who bats, you bat for 2 hours and you bowl for 2 hours. You don't split 2 hours with 1 hour and 1 hour.
Right.
That's if you genuinely want to be an all-rounder. In other words, welcome to the hard world of being an all-rounder, or welcome to the hard world of learning how to bat properly.
Yeah.
The difficulty, of course, is if you're in organised practice and there's only an hour or 2 hours each week, then if you're bowling for an hour and a half in the nets and then the coach says, put your pads on, have a bit of a hit for the last 15 minutes, if that's all you ever get in a team environment, the question would be, how the heck am I going to improve if I only get 15 minutes every other week? That would be a fair question. What I would say is go and do your own practice. Find your own time. You know, if you're serious about playing cricket and you're serious about improving, you have to find your own time to practice your own skills. You don't always need a coach there to do the work. You sometimes need a friend or a colleague to bowl to you or feed you cricket balls, bobble feed, tennis balls. You can go and have a hit yourself. But I think you have to allocate quality time to learning the skills that you're trying to develop. You can't just say, well, look, I'm a big fast bowler, I don't have time to bat. That's no excuse. Find time to do it. If you're a genuine all-rounder, and by that I mean someone who would be picked in the team for either batting or bowling if you didn't do the other discipline, if you see what I mean, then you need to work twice as hard as someone who just bats or just bowls. I think this is a common fallacy for youngsters. They think, well, I've got to split my time in half. Well, actually, no, you've got to find more time because it's hard work. You're taking up two place. Well, if you're saving a place, but effectively you're two cricketers if you bat and bowl. And also the fielding side, the whole team has to field properly. And so you should always find time to do fielding practice. And again, 11 to 18 year olds are guys that tend not to do much fielding unless they're told to.
Yeah.
A young kid will always want to bat in the nets. He'll always probably want to have a bowl in the nets, but he very rarely wants to do fielding practice unless it's organised or he's told to do it. So I would say a perfect scenario for a young kid or an adult player who wants to improve, a good club player, is to spend most of your time on your main discipline, find extra time on your sub-discipline, but you have to find time to work on fielding skills at some stage. And the more regularly you work on something, the more it appears on a Saturday afternoon when you're playing for your club or in the week for your school. But it is fiendishly difficult, David. I have to admit, I mean, I was an all-rounder. I signed professional terms as a batter and then joined Essex and signed professional terms as a fast bowler. So I had two different counties for two different disciplines. And growing up as a batter who bowled a bit, I ended up becoming a fast bowler who batted a bit. So I've been through that process. If you look at Freddie Flintoff, for example, he got selected for England as a batter who bowled. Now he's absolutely one of our best bowlers who can bat. Mm. So his whole game has changed. And I think if you think of that, people develop in different ways at different levels. The two skills are like roller coasters. They're never quite working at the same time. You get the ups and downs at different times. So find the time. Don't split it. Find extra time. And if you really want to go to the top of the tree, is to spend more time than you think working at your game.
If you want coaching from Ian Pont, you can access Pitch Vision Academy's How to Bowl Faster coaching course on www.pitchvision.com/academy. Well, this week we have an interview with Lawrence Houghton, who's a researcher at the University of Western Australia. And Part of his research includes trying to find ways to make net practice more realistic. It's going to be really interesting to hear. So let's have a listen to what Lawrence has found out and what he's researching.
Can you start by telling us what your study is actually about?
Overall, my PhD is going to be looking at developing a simulation for batting, particularly during a net situation. Typically, our net training is very unspecific, so it's trying to introduce more of the physical strain, so you're testing your skill under physical fatigue.
Okay, and how do you do that? How does the study do that? How does it simulate that?
The simulation lasts for 2 hours, and there's six 20-minute scenarios.
Right.
And within each of the 20-minute scenarios, audio cues tell the batsman what workload they need to do in the coming over. So whether they need to run two twos or a one, for example.
So they're in the net, they're standing in the net, and they get told how many runs they have to run.
Yep. So within the over, there's, say for example, they have to run a 1, 2 and a 3.
Yeah.
They can run that 1, 2 and 3 whenever they want in the over. And the balls are delivered every 35 seconds.
Okay.
So they try and couple, the biggest thing is trying to couple the shot with the runs made, so you're not just running a 3 when you've blocked a ball for that's not even gone off the square.
So the batsman is facing a delivery, he plays a shot, a cover drive, something like that, and then he runs one of the required sets of runs, a 3, a 2, whatever.
Yeah. Within each of the 20-minute scenarios, the workloads are actually different, so it's based on stage of inning. So obviously, you're coming in, you're not running that hard, and one scenario, for example, is based on 2020 mm-hmm. World Cup frequency of running, so it's far more intense.
And how does pitch vision help measure with the skill performance?
At the moment, within each of the 20-minute scenarios, it's not just a physical test, because obviously, clearly batting, physical fatigue isn't the biggest problem. Skill is obviously the biggest thing, so it's how physical fatigue can relate to skill fatigue and skill detriment during say, a 2-hour, 20-minute batting scenario. So within each of the 20-minute scenarios, there's not just physical demands, but a decision-making environment's promoted. So there's a field setting, and they come in, and you're told like how many run and what the match scenario is. For example, it's 2 for 130, and mm-hmm. and you're on 50, and your partner's on 30, and then so using pitch vision within each of the 20-minute scenarios, we'll get a measure. The basic one will be how many runs they've scored per scenario.
I see. Okay, so then if you see the runs going down, then you know that there's some kind of performance loss there.
At a basic level, there's obviously there might be the inclusion of, for example, footwork, and whether that changes during the 2 hours. So it's just related. It's just trying to relate physical fatigue to. Mm-hmm. to a measure of skill fatigue, and whether they can hit the gaps, because they'll know what the field setting is, so it's whether they can hit the gaps. I mean, because anyone can bat in a net for 10 minutes and look yeah. like you're a top player, but it's once you get tired and your head starts falling over, and that's really the heart of it, really. So
it seems to me that there are some implications, practical implications for coaches and players from this.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we've been using it in without pitch vision, just our BATEC simulation. We've been using it during pre-season over here with the first graders at the University Cricket Club. And the biggest thing is, it's not a genius idea that you have to run between the wickets when you bat in a net.
Yeah.
It's just actually getting players to do that. I know loads of coaches, you try all the time and people don't do it, but it's amazing how suddenly when you've got these audio cues and the instructions and a beep going off, it's almost like Pavlov's dogs and everyone wants to run hard. You know, everyone's on a beep test and they So as soon as the tones are going off, people, the guys are running hard and enjoying it. And it's a good step up in variation in your training as well. Trying to work on your strengths while you're tired. So.
Thank you, Lawrence, for your time. They look like interesting information. Welcome to the listeners' question section for this week. And this week's theme is nutrition. David, I hope you're revved up because this is one of your sections, which you specialize in. So our first question is from Rahimullah today, and he's a level 2 cricket coach, David, and he says he needs information on nutrition, basically, and he asks you for knowledge on how to design a one-week complete competition diet for cricketers that would be suitable for them during the season, and also describe how you could help them in maintaining hydration levels in the hot conditions. David, I know you don't get as much hot conditions in the UK, but would you have any tips for Rahimullah?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's still important, especially when you're playing cricket regularly, that you look after your hydration correctly. So let's talk about the first part of this question first, though, which is the competition diet for cricketers for in-season. I'm not quite sure why it's a 1 week. I mean, that's 1 week's not going to make much difference here or there. But maybe he means like a weekly diet, perhaps. So the first question really is, what is the goal? Generally speaking, in season, you're not going to have many players who are going to be either wanting to lose a lot of weight or gain a lot of weight. So it's probably going to be some kind of maintenance thing. And I think the key is that you can't give a cookie cutter style diet to cricketers and say, right, there you go, eat that food. So a more sensible approach would be to say, right, we've got a set of rules here, that we've got an ideal set of rules here that we want you to follow. And if you can follow those rules, that's really good, with about 90% compliance, because there's not much of a difference when it comes to nutrition or most things, exercise, anything like that. Where you have, if you have 90% compliance, then it's pretty much the same as 100%. The main rules are that you should really eat regularly to get enough nutrients in throughout the course of a day. So if you're playing cricket over the course of a day, luckily the play is split up into sessions, which are about right, so you can have something to eat between each session. So that's good. If you're playing a whole day game, you've got lunch and tea, and then you can have dinner after the match. And then, or if you're playing an English style game, then you might have a 50 over split, 100 over match, where you have tea about halfway through. So that's good. That's easy. And you should be aiming really to eat every few hours. That's the key. Every 2, 3, possibly 4 hours, because that just keeps constant stream of nutrition going into your body all the time. The next thing is that you should make sure that you're getting enough protein. Most people don't get enough protein in. So the key there is to pretty much every time you eat, get some protein in. And ideally some kind of lean, you know, high quality complete protein, like chicken or fish or red meat. Anything that's very high in protein, that's got complete protein in it, that's going to be good. Plenty of fruit and vegetables. Again, ideally, vegetables with every meal, but at least I would say 5 portions of vegetables every day. That's probably the minimum you want to be looking at. Anything up to 10 or even 15 portions of vegetables a day. That, you know, the gold standard, I suppose, is anything over 10. And eat whole food as much as possible. Avoid processed food, basically. Anything that comes in a packet or that your grandmother wouldn't have eaten is probably a good rule when it comes to processed food. It's a good general rule. And the final thing is healthy fats, which is, you know, quite a buzz term. You know, you hear about omega-3s and all that kind of thing. Make sure you're getting your healthy fats in. And I'm not just talking about omega-3, which you can find in fish and flaxseed or linseed, it's called in some places. Walnuts, things like that. I'm also talking about, you know, polyunsaturated type fats and monounsaturated type fats, which you find in things like peanut butter and avocados, olive oil, And also, don't forget about the saturated fats. Although they have got a bad rap for being unhealthy, as long as you eat a balance of saturated fats compared to unsaturated and monounsaturated, then you'll be fine. You'll be fine. And as long as you don't have too much fat in your diet. So again, it's not difficult to do. You just, if you're having a salad, whack an avocado in there. Always think, right, where's the fat in this meal? What is the fat in this meal? Where is it? And is it balancing me out? And that's really the key. And then you just have to find a way of getting into the good habits. And that's the hard part.
Yeah.
You know, you have to do something. I would say you have to do something for at least 30 days before you can decide whether you can integrate it as a habit or not. And if you're giving up after a week, then you're not really giving yourself a chance.
I'm interested, David. Is there a rule where you have to always vary your diet after a certain period? So, like, is it all right for you to go through the same diet for a year or two, or do you have to change it up every, I don't know, say 2 or 3 months?
Well, a variety is a very important part of a good diet. And I wouldn't say, I mean, if it works for you, if you have a set diet, which you maybe eat the same food at the same time every day, and you just do that all the time, then
you would want to
change it up. But most people get bored of eating exactly the same food all the time, and they will naturally branch out. Now, the key with variety is when you are branching out, instead of going, oh, I'm fed up with this healthy diet, I'm fed up of it, I'm just going to go and have a pizza, then you think to yourself, right, next time I go to the shops, I'm going to buy a fruit which I've never bought or eaten before, and I'm going to try it.
Yeah.
You might not like it. Fair enough. Don't buy it again. But, you know, you're not wasted a great deal of money if you just buy one, I don't know, star fruit, for example.
Yeah.
So that's you're right there, Kev. Variety is very important, and because we get bored very quickly. You know, we want to try new things, and that can cause a problem if you are restricting yourself and saying yourself, right, I'm not going to eat anything unhealthy, I'm going to stay away from all the unhealthy food, because the more you think about not eating something, the more you want to eat it. So,
true.
Get lots of variety in, but also don't think, oh, I can never eat pizza, or I can never, you know, have a bag of chips, because you can, but as long as it's in the context of a good diet, that's absolutely fine. The second part of the question was on hydration.
Yep.
The key really with hydration, well, traditionally, and still, even nowadays, what the professionals do is they get weighed in the morning, they go out and do their day's play or their training, they come back at the end of the session and they get weighed again. And the difference is how much they've lost through sweating. And then they get given a drink, water or Gatorade or Lucozade or something like that to replenish what's been lost. That's the traditional way of doing it. Kind of put a scientific bent on it. But what the research says is that you don't really need to worry too much about that. Just trust your thirst. If you're thirsty, have a drink. If you're not thirsty, don't have a drink. Simple as that, really. The key is to make sure there is a drink on hand if you are thirsty, and if you get thirsty, drink it. And that should cover you. Okay, your body's quite clever. It's not going to let you dehydrate yourself.
Nice. Well, our next question is from Vishnu, and he says, David, I wanted to know a good solid vegetarian diet for cricket. It would be great if you could tell us some recipes and tips which are easy to make. I don't really care about the taste as long as it is good for cricket. Now, David, this has got to be really hard, because I know vegetarians have a lot of limitations on stuff like protein and all. But about a year ago, when my family decided to go vegetarian for a month to see how it would be like, I was open to the sort of vegetarian cuisine, and I found out a lot of new things, especially soy meat. I don't know if you've heard of soy meat, David, but it's not meat, but it's made out of soy beans. But it tastes exactly like chicken. And basically, it's got so much protein in it, according to the cover. So, yeah, I wanted to know, have you ever tried soy meat? Is it really beneficial? Does it have all the protein you'd need, which you'd normally get from chicken?
We'll come back to that. Remind me of that question, because we'll come back to that. Let's answer the main question first, and we'll come back to that question about soy meat, because that's an interesting side question. So again, the key is to follow the same basic rules as we talked about before. You know, get your protein, get your fat, get your whole foods in. Do it in the right way. One thing I see, I was a vegetarian myself for a while. What I have seen with myself is that a lot of vegetarians do is they have a pretty unhealthy diet, because they end up just eating meat-free alternatives of meat. So, you know, you get the vegetarian burgers or the vegetarian sausages or whatever, and that's processed food. So that's not the greatest. That's not the greatest way to eat. So stick with the main rules. And by the way, those rules which I said earlier, they're part of a system called Precision Nutrition by Dr. John Berardi. I've talked about this before. He's worked with people at a very high level, and he's also worked with people just, you know, who want to lose weight, and just sort of normal people as well. So he's run the whole gamut, and he's come up with these rules. And I'll put a link to the show notes through to his system, which is called Precision Nutrition. And that the latest version of that system has a whole book on how to eat if you're a vegetarian, or what he calls it, plant-based diet, basically. So now the problem comes with vegetarians. There's two main areas that it's quite difficult to get sufficient nutrients for, which is vitamin B12, which you get in meat, and protein, which again, for most people, the main source of protein is either meat or dairy. So if you're a vegan, i.e. you're someone who doesn't eat any meat, doesn't eat any dairy, then you're going to have a big problem finding protein in your diet. If you're a vegetarian, which is someone who will eat dairy food, you know, you can drink milk, eat yogurt, that makes it a bit easier, because you can get quite a good amount of protein from dairy food, particularly eggs. Eggs is an excellent source of very high quality protein. Vitamin B12 is a problem for everyone, really, but you can still get it. Now, don't get me wrong, it doesn't mean that you have to take supplements or anything like that if you don't want to. You can still get it from natural whole food sources, both vitamin B12 and protein, and as long as you make sure your diet is rich with food which has high quality protein in it, then you can usually get the B12 in there as well. So I'm talking about things like beans, you know, kidney beans, chickpeas, that kind of thing, nuts. Oats are a very good source of protein, and they're a starchy carbohydrate, so you have to be careful about that, but oats are a very good source of protein. Quinoa, which I don't know if you've ever come across that, Kev?
No. Never heard of it.
It's a little bit like rice. Over here in the UK, it's pretty simple to get hold of. It's available in most supermarkets. I don't know what it's like in Australia, but it's spelt Q-U-I-N-O-A, and it's pronounced quinoa. And it's a complete lean protein, and it's the only sort of grain type food which contains complete lean protein. And rice itself, whole grain rice, is another great source of protein. So as long as you're getting that kind of food in there, then you're going to be okay. Recipe-wise, well, I don't really eat a vegetarian diet myself, so it's quite hard to come up with any recipes off the top of my head. The key when you're cooking is to make sure that you're getting that protein in and some healthy fat in with every meal, and that you know you get sufficient flavor, because another problem with all kind of diets is, you know, it can be a bit dull unless you know how to deal with flavorings. So you know, make sure it's not difficult to flavor food. You know, you can get some herbs and spices and throw them in and see what it tastes like. Basically, is the key, and that's how I learned about flavoring, is just experimenting with stuff until I found out what I liked with certain foods.
Yeah.
So let's come back to that soy question, which I put aside at the beginning. Now, yeah. Soy is an interesting one because soy's got quite a bad rap in sort of nutrition media about how it's not good for men to take because it ups your estrogen levels and all kind of negative stuff like that. Now, the jury is out on whether that's true or not. I mean, in a lab, it's true. You know, if you do it in a dish, then it is true. But whether that applies to real world eating or not is another question. Generally speaking, I'd say to be on the safe side, then you probably wouldn't want to absolutely eat tons and tons of this soy protein, stuff that is basically meat replica, isn't it? It just replaces meat.
So
I mean, you probably want to avoid great piles of it. It's probably not going to do you massive amount of harm if you eat some sometimes. The thing I don't like about it, the overarching thing I don't like about it, is that if you're going to be a vegetarian, then be a vegetarian. Don't be just someone who doesn't eat meat and instead they substitute meat with a meat replacement. We have something in this country called quorn. Do you have that in Australia, quorn?
Yeah, we have that.
Quorn. Yeah, right, okay, yeah. So, all right, so people don't know what I'm talking about when I talk about quorn. Quorn is they claim it's a mushroom from a mushroom, but I don't think it's that simple. But anyway, it's basically just meat replacement. You can buy mince, sausages, burgers, all that kind of thing. And they say, well, low in fat, you know, all that kind of thing, give it a healthy message. But it's a processed food, you know, and if you're eating a processed food, you're not eating a whole food.
Yeah.
So if you're going to be vegetarian, eat vegetarian whole foods, and don't cop out by having a vegetarian burger instead of a beef burger.
There it is. You've heard it from the man himself.
That's just my opinion. I mean, food gets a lot, you know, has a lot of different opinions, and it's a very political thing as well. You know, you wouldn't think it is, would you? Food. I mean, you know, what's the politics of chicken? You know, what's the politics of wheat? But there's a lot of political stuff that goes on around food, and that's my particular opinion. And if you disagree, that's fine, and let us know if you do. I mean, we're always open to discussion on any of these issues, so you know, you can send us an email and tell me I'm being an idiot if you want.
Right, as always, don't forget that you can catch all the articles, updates, forums, and anything you hear about on the show on www.pitchvision.com. Stay tuned for our next show on the 21st of August, with the theme being fast bowling. So if you have any questions, and I'm sure all you fast bowlers out there have heaps of questions, or any feedback to add to that in general, please email us at mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. That's mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. Thank you for listening and hope to see you next time. So signing off from Sydney, Australia, this is Kevin Sampath.
And this is David Hinchliffe in the UK.
The My Cricket Coach Show is a copyright-protected production for Pitch Vision. For more information, please visit pitchvision.com.